the law has changed so that we have gender equality in marriage under the law. And I think that makes a lot of people think that the problems have been solved when, of course, they haven't been.
I am overwhelmed by violent fantasies. I have spent hours thinking about things that I would like to do to Dick Cheney.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Dubai and Kuwait crack down on girly boys. A law professor exposes marriage equality's legal loopholes. And humorist Kate Clinton goes Cheney hunting. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Don Beaupre.
And I'm Erica Springer.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 19, 2008. Police in the Gulf city state of Dubai, one of the seven oil-rich United Arab Emirates, arrested up to 40 men this week, various reports differ on the number, in a crackdown on cross-dressers in shopping malls and other public places. All of the men are non-resident workers or tourists, according to a statement by Dubai Police Chief Lieutenant General Dahai Khalfan Tamim on his organization's website. Dahai reported that administrative deportation orders would be sought against all of them. He denounced a campaign in May under the slogan, "Our social values are precious, let's protect them," targeting those who do not respect social values and behave like the opposite sex. A comparable campaign was announced in similarly Muslim Kuwait in June, specifically targeting gay men in addition to cross-dressers. A Kuwaiti MP told a local newspaper that the government has to crack down on what he called girly boys, who he claimed promote crime and sexual immorality in the country. Kuwait's parliament passed a law in December that makes imitating the appearance of the opposite sex a crime punishable by up to 1 year behind bars. Subsequent roundups netted at least 16 suspects, according to Human Rights Watch, which reported that three detainees were beaten.
But the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe plans to issue a formal declaration in support of a wide range of sexual orientation and gender identity rights, and to engage the entire organization in combating discrimination against LGBT people. European Union anti-bias protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity now only cover employment. The committee is composed of 27 foreign ministers of the Council of Europe's member nations. However, the proposals must receive unanimous support in order to be enacted. Boris Dietrich, advocacy director of the LGBT rights program at Human Rights Watch, said that the European Union's Charter of Fundamental Rights prohibits any discrimination on any grounds, including sexual orientation. It is past time to turn that promise into real protections.
The U.S. Senate voted this week to repeal a 21-year-old law barring HIV-positive people from visiting or seeking legal residency in the country. The measure was attached to a spending bill that triples amounts for programs that treat and protect millions in Africa and elsewhere from HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. The Senate version will have to be worked out with the House, which passed its version of the bill in April. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chair Joseph Biden of Delaware told reporters that he'd been coordinating with House leaders on the legislation and was confident of approval of a reconciled version sometime soon that includes repeal of the ban. It originated in 1987 and was explicitly codified by Congress in 1993 when it reformed U.S. immigration laws. While they currently exclude foreigners with any communicable disease of public health significance from entering the U.S., only HIV is specifically named in the statute. Rachel B. Tiven, executive director of the U.S. LGBT advocacy group Immigration Equality, called the ban ineffective, unnecessary, and simply bad public health policy, adding that it is especially harmful to gay and lesbian families who do not benefit from the waiver available to opposite-sex couples. The Senate's change is welcome and long overdue.
There were marriage equality developments in three U.S. states this week. As expected, the California Supreme Court refused to hear a challenge to the legality of Proposition 8, a November ballot initiative that would nullify the court's May 15th ruling and constitutionally ban same-gender marriage. Thousands of same-gender couples have gotten marriage licenses, and many have already married in the state since the court ruling took effect in mid-June. A new field poll released this week suggested that Proposition 8 will fail, if only by a bare majority. 51% opposed the measure, while 42% said they'd vote for it. 63% of respondents identifying themselves as Democrats were against Proposition 8, and 66% of independents were opposed to it, but 68% of Republicans supported the proposed ban. The well-respected field poll surveyed 672 likely California voters during the week of July 8th through 14th. It had a sampling error of plus or minus 3.9 percentage points. Poll director Mark DiCamillo told reporters that starting out behind is usually an ominous sign for a proposition. Over 90% of propositions that start out behind get taken down. Marriage equality advocates say they're heartened by the poll results, but note that the November 4th vote is still months away and that opponents of Proposition 8 must continue to fundraise and organize against it.
About 200 LGBT activists and union members gathered in front of the Manchester Grand Hyatt in San Diego this week to launch a boycott of the hotel. Its owner, prominent local businessman Doug Manchester, donated $125,000 to the campaign in support of Proposition 8. About a half a block away, nearly 100 who favor the proposed amendment staged a counter-demonstration.
Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Times reported that dozens of United Methodist Church ministers in California are defying church rules and performing wedding ceremonies for same-gender couples, even though they could be defrocked for doing so. The two bishops who oversee the United Methodist Church in the state, Marianne Swenson and Beverly J. Shimana, are warning pastors that they could face a church trial and lose their jobs. But the Reverend Janet Golery McKeithen of Santa Monica's Church in Ocean Park told the Times that she plans to conduct weddings for two same-gender couples in August and September. "I love my church and I don't want to leave it," she said. "But I can't be part of a church that is willing to portray a God that is so hateful. I would rather be forced out." The United Methodist Church is the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. with some 11 million members.
Same-gender couples from Wisconsin who marry in California could also be punished by up to 9 months in jail and a $10,000 fine. That penalty is part of a 1915 law originally enacted to prevent recognition of interracial marriages performed in other states. It could be revived to prosecute Wisconsin gay and lesbian couples who tie the knot in California. Unlike Massachusetts, the only other U.S. state where same-gender marriage is legal, the Golden State has no residency requirement. Wisconsin voters approved a constitutional amendment in 2006 restricting marriage to heterosexual couples. Julaine Appling of the right-wing Wisconsin Family Council told reporters that same-gender couples who break the 1915 law by marrying in California should be punished, calling it a defrauding of the government. But activist Bob Kleba in Madison told the local Capital Times newspaper that he still plans to marry longtime partner David Waugh in California, saying that it would be interesting to be prosecuted.
The Massachusetts Senate has voted to repeal a similar law passed in 1913, also originally designed to ban recognition of interracial marriages performed in other states. It's been used to bar same-gender couples from traveling to Massachusetts to get married if they can't legally wed in their home states. Soon after marriage equality became legal in 2004, then-Republican Governor Mitt Romney, who opposed it, ordered town clerks to enforce the little-known law and deny licenses to lesbi-gay couples from other states. Critics of the statute, including Democrat Deval Patrick, the state's first black governor, say it carries a racist taint and needs to be rescinded. The Senate did just that in a simple voice vote this week. The state's House of Representatives is expected to concur sometime soon. California, which doesn't require residency, is already reaping the financial benefits from same-gender couples who've been traveling to the state to get hitched. An analysis released by the Massachusetts Office of Housing and Economic Development found that repealing the 1913 law and allowing same-gender couples from other states to marry there would add $111 million to the Bay State economy.
Elsewhere, in the first country in the world to open full legal marriage to same-gender couples, Dutch authorities have developed a replacement for maiden name so that gay men who want to take their spouse's surname when they marry won't feel awkward. Geboortenaam translates to birth name. It will replace maiden name on official forms, according to a report this week by Radio Netherlands.
And finally, a court in Sicily has ordered the Italian government to pay 100,000 euros, about $160,000, to a man who was issued a disabled driver's license because he's gay. A few years ago, now 27-year-old Danilo Giuffrida told doctors he's gay during a medical examination for the armed forces to escape the 1 year of service that was required at the time, but has since been abolished. The information about Giuffrida, however, was passed on to the Ministry of Defense, which in turn released it to other government agencies, including the Transport Ministry. After he easily passed the driving test to renew his license, examiners told Giuffrida that he'd have to repeat the test or have his license suspended on the grounds of his sexual identity disturbance. After he passed the test a second time, he was told he'd receive only a 1 year renewal as a disabled driver rather than the usual 10 years. Giuffrida then filed his lawsuit. The court ruled that Giuffrida's constitutional rights had been violated and that homosexuality could not be considered a disability. His lawyer said he believed the verdict was the first time the Italian government has been found guilty of discrimination based on sexual orientation. Giuffrida said he'll use some of his lawsuit proceeds to buy a new car.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 19th, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Erica Springer.
And I'm John Beaupre.
Start thinking of what you'd like lesbian humorist Kate Clinton to include on her list of things to do to Dick Cheney later in the program. Does the right to marry solve all the problems of U.S. same-gender couples and other non-traditional families? Feminist law professor Nancy Polakoff says absolutely not in her book Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. Polakoff discusses her critique of marriage and what the alternatives might be with This Way Out correspondent Josie Cattogio.
Feminists have been critical of the institution of marriage for quite a number of years now. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes,
what is
and
that
in
criticism
fact,
about?
One of the reasons I wrote this book was because I feel like, unlike you and me, there is at least a generation and maybe more who have grown up without any awareness of the feminist critique of marriage. And so part of what I'm trying to do in this book is reclaim that so that people like the students I teach will see another perspective on marriage. I mean, basically, they have grown up hearing the only criticism of marriage being the exclusion of same-sex couples. So they think that if they support marriage for same-sex couples, they've handled lesbian and gay family issues, and they've handled the problem with marriage. So really, this book is my effort to, you know, reclaim the history, as you say, of the critique of marriage that started in the 19th century with the feminist concerns about the subjugation of women in marriage, and then was quite prominent in second wave feminism in the 1970s in terms of a critique of marriage. But one of the things that's happened is that the law has changed so that we have gender equality in marriage under the law. And I think that makes a lot of people think that the problems have been solved when, of course, they haven't been. I do want to say, though, that when you say, you know, the law has no business in people's private relationships, I'm very sympathetic to that, except that the law all the time decides what relationships matter and what relationships don't matter. So if your partner is killed at work, the law has to decide whether you are going to get survivor's benefits to compensate for the loss of an income to you. And so what I'm trying to do in the book is argue that marriage should never be the dividing line in the law between the relationships that count and those that don't. And I am excited that I found so many examples, individual laws here and there, a patchwork across the country, that I feel like I was able to pull together and say, look, there's one place that gets this right. Let's spread this idea everywhere.
Well, talk about Canada, because Canada really does get it right, and that was a really startling example of the differences.
Yeah, I love to talk about Canada because I think most gay rights activists do know that same-sex couples can marry in Canada, and so they think of Canada as a haven in that regard. But what I like to tell people about is that in Canada, of course, different sex couples were able to marry. And then the next thing that happened in the law was that the law began to treat different sex unmarried couples the same way it treated married couples. In fact, the Canadian Supreme Court has an opinion saying it offends the dignity of its people to require a couple to marry, that it's nothing more than imposing a religious doctrine on people who are entitled to choose not to marry. So they have non-discrimination against unmarried couples, and then same-sex couples were required to be treated in the law like unmarried different-sex couples, which essentially gave them virtually all of the rights and obligations of marriage, and then only after that were gay and lesbian couples allowed to marry. So marriage is really a choice for everybody in Canada. If it expresses something about the way you love somebody, if it's a statement that you want to make, well, you can marry, whether you're a straight couple or a gay couple. But nobody has to marry for health insurance, survivor's benefits, pensions, tax benefits, the right to justice if your relationship ends, all the kinds of arguments that same-sex couples make here about why we should have access to marriage. In Canada, they've just removed marriage from the equation of legal rights.
Well, let's talk about children, because people invariably say, well, marriage exists for the protection of children.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that argument, and I hate it even more when the gay rights movement adapts it to arguing for same-sex marriage. And in the book, I do present some of the worst examples of this. I mean, basically, the right-wing marriage movement, secular and religious, and that's what they call themselves, the marriage movement, they do take the position that the decline of lifelong heterosexual marriage is responsible for all of our social problems. And I mean all of them. Poverty, homelessness, substance abuse, crime, delinquency, infant mortality, illiteracy, chronic illness, you name a problem, this movement is going to attribute it to the decline of lifelong heterosexual marriage. And what they're doing is creating this red herring, this distraction from the urgent social problems we have that cry out for a concerted public response. They're trying to turn it into a private moral failing. If only people would get married and stay married and raise their children in marriages, well, then we wouldn't have these social problems, which is, of course, complete nonsense. But it's got quite a number of adherents in the Bush administration, where $750 million have been allocated for marriage promotion. In my city, we have full-length bus shelter posters that say marriage works and that have brides and grooms on them. This is public money going to private groups to promote marriage. It's an outrage, really.
I know. As a feminist, I'm still utterly shocked that we're allowed to spend money that's supposed to feed children to promote marriage.
And I would like to see more outrage rather than seeing arguments used by gay couples to say, oh, marriage is so good for children, that's why you should let us marry. Really, those are the arguments that make me the most angry, because since the Supreme Court ruled in 1968 that children born outside marriage have the right to be treated equally with children born to married couples, any stigma that remains, any discrimination that remains between children whose parents are married and those who aren't, that's the problem. The solution isn't to get any more people married. The solution is to stop differentiating based on the marital status of children's parents. And so it makes me very angry when gay rights groups make those arguments.
Feminist law professor and writer Nancy Polakoff continues to go beyond marriage in the conclusion of her conversation with Josie Catoggio.
You can't disinherit your spouse, but you can disinherit your children. Like, how shocking is that? That if you've got some children with a former spouse, you can leave them absolutely nothing in your will, period. But your new spouse, that person you can't disinherit. I mean, it's completely backwards.
Next time on This Way Out.
Make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
When lesbian feminist humorist Kate Clinton brought her climate change tour to Alexandria, Virginia last November, she served up some choice words for members of the outgoing Bush administration in what she calls a buckshot lunch, despite her attempt at an attitude change.
But I'm trying to be all spiritual. And I'm going along and trying to be where my feet are and trying to be all Om Shanti Boom Boom. And then I am overwhelmed by violent fantasies. I have spent hours thinking about things that I would like to do to Dick Cheney. I'm not proud of it. Oh, Dick Cheney, what a pant load. Old number two, we call him. And now he's head of the fourth branch of government. He's the executive or something. And now apparently we have to call Dick Grandpa. Yes, because his lovely daughter, Mary, she's been busy. She's got a new book out, and it's called Self-Made Man. No, that's not it. It's called, it just sounds like a line from Shirley Temple. Now it's my turn. Oh, when wasn't it your turn? White girl. So she and her lovely partner, Heather, had a baby, and Dick and his lovely wife, Lon Cheney. She's scary, that's all I'm saying. They went to visit the baby, and apparently they brought some lovely gifts. They brought a tiny water board, and... oh, you're going to love the next one. And a starter BB gun kit. That story still kills me. The thing that bugged me was all his little pals were like, he's a great hunter. I'm like, he shot his friend in the face. Oh, he's a wonderful hunter. Okay. And then Dick said, I love that one line. He said, well, I just had a beer at lunch with Mel Gibson. Okay. So he's a great hunter. He's a great hunter. So he shoots his friend in the face, and then he does what all good hunters do. He ate him. And then what he didn't finish, he shared with the village. You see? A lovely hunter. I laughed when I wrote it. So now apparently the little baby is talking, and it sounds like this. But then I'm trying to be, you know, trying to be cool, trying to be calm, trying to be kind of spiritual. You got it? So I'll just be walking along, having a nice day, being where my feet are, and suddenly I have these raging resentments, generally about the war. But why is it that people who were for the war and changed their mind and now are against the war have more street credibility than I do, who was against the war from the beginning? Can you tell me that? I love those people who say, well, if I knew then what I know now. What exactly did you need to know? And then all summer long, we were waiting for the Petraeus report. Oh, I don't know about you, but I was on pins and needles. Whatever is he going to say? And we're going to listen to Petraeus, who 2 years ago when he was there, he lost 110,000 AK-47s. Oops, clerical error. No, let's listen to him. Basically, the report was there was some good news and some bad news. The good news is that many Iraqis are not being killed because they're already dead or they've left the country. The bad news was that apparently the Iraqi parliament is not reaching political benchmarks. Please, our Congress is not reaching political benchmarks. And they have water and air conditioning and snacks. I'm telling you, Iraq is crack and he's on it. And it's hard to talk to people about it. I was on a plane, what are the chances? And I was circling Newark for about 4 hours. And I'm sitting next to this really big guy, because somewhere in my ticket dossier, it says, sit her next to a really big guy who thinks the armrest is his. And we got talking, and we started talking about the war. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. And he was all jonesing for the war. He had a big war boner going on.
He's like, I'll tell you what we got to do. Here's what we got to do. We got to keep this surge thing going. We got to get more boots on the ground. We got to get some 508s in there and blah, blah, blah. We were just watching his lips move.
And finally I said to him, you know what? Stop. I'm for peace. I'm against this war. And he said to me, well, little lady. I said, thank you so much. because a lot of times on planes I get sirred, you know, because I just see short hair on the top. Will you have, sir? I always remember what Leah Delaria once said. When somebody said, will you have, sir? She said, a vagina. But he said, well, little lady, why do you hate your country so much? I was like, I don't hate my country. I love my country. I hate what's happening. And he was all like, well, what would you do? What would you do? What's your plan? And I thought, finally, someone is asking me what I would do. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I would do. I would go into Iraq and I would build malls. I would make that green zone into the mall of Iraq. I'd let them buy electronic equipment, iPhones, I don't care. Get them basic cable. Let them buy clothes, pastels, who cares? I mean, it's totally pacified us. It could work there. Now, for those of us who live above ground, we know it's not going well in Iraq because now they're talking about getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now they're all like, oh, we think you guys are great soldiers. We were kidding. Get in the front. And then that Peter Pace, who said that homosexuality is immoral. I thought, oh, good. We're too immoral to fight in an immoral war. Two negatives make a positive. Thank you. Thank you so much. And those old retired military guys, they're all over the cable shows, you know, talking about gays in the military. And they're all like, well, if there are gays in the military, and they always talk through a burp. Why is that? They're all like, well, if there are gays. Incoming. If there are gays in the military. Could you possibly burp and get back to me? Would that be all right? Well, if there are gays in the military, it'll destroy the military. Excellent. You know, I've always felt that apparently we could have put a flaming queen on a hillside in Iraq going, hello, and it would have been over and not a shot fired.
Kate Clinton's latest comedy CD is called Climate Change. For more information, log on to kateclinton.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Erica Springer, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and Josie Cotoggio contributed program material. You heard a cut from Kate Clinton's Climate Change CD, Donald O'Connor sang Make 'em Laugh, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to help keep us on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of all our programs there. To receive weekly email alerts describing the content of each This Way Out, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WFCS New Britain, Connecticut, KUOI Moscow, Idaho, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.